Well, thank you for the invitation. So I'm going to talk about risk, but my risk is going to be after diagnosis. So there's risk of recurrence and risk of death afterwards. And this is about sort of statistical approaches to modeling data where that's the setting. So I'm looking at a setting of colon cancer. And so the plan is to tell you about multi-state models, to tell you about cure models, to tell you a lot about the data, which is that's sort of a central focus here, and then go through sort of what that model gives you and how to construct it and how to do some estimation for it. So here's sort of multi-state models where you think of people transitioning through different states. So you can have a progressive sort of 3D, three-state disease, or down at the bottom we have what's viewed as a classical healthy, diseased, dead model, illness, death model. So you can make transitions between the states. Okay, so those are sort of simple examples of multi-state models. So a cure model is something that's used in statistics quite a lot. So this is particularly useful if you want to think about sort of an event happening in the future and the times of that event, and you think about whether the event might happen, what factors are associated with whether it might ever happen in the future, and then you also think about sort of separately, when is that event going to happen, given that it's going to happen? Is it going to happen soon or is it going to happen much later? So the cure models are good for that, and they're good in settings where you have a sort of a strong rationale for a cured group. Probably should have put cured in quotes here, but it's, you can sort of imagine, and you'll see in the example that, and then you've got good empirical evidence. So this happens quite a lot in cancer. And so here's a picture from data I'm going to be getting into a little more in a minute. So this is patients who were treated for colon cancer, and these are just Kaplan-Meier plots from most patients of time to recurrence, so when the cancer comes back. And the feature, and there's two lines there. One is stage two, smaller disease. One is stage three, larger disease. And the feature that you'll notice is this sort of plateau region. After about 6 years, you don't get any more recurrences. So that's exactly the situation where you think of they're cured of recurrence. Okay, so the setting I have is there's actually multiple 12 clinical trials, and each trial has got two arms, a treatment arm and a control arm. I'm not really going to focus too much on the sort of a treatment effects here. And we've got these two endpoints. We've got the recurrence of the cancer, and we've got death of a patient. And so these trials were designed on sort of time to death, but it's not really going to be my focus. We don't know the cause of death, and we've got other covariates. So, in this case, it's stage of cancer and age of a patient, but you could imagine sort of modifiable risk factors. Smoking could be other covariates. So the sort of modeling framework would allow sort of a combination of unmodifiable things and modifiable factors. But that's for setting. Okay, so the goal here is to sort of build a model which describes that data and describes the relationships between the covariates and the outcomes, sort of bringing in the context, and that context is going to be this cured fraction. And sort of my claim is you can get a little more sort of scientifically interpretable understanding of the data by doing that. And as you'll see, there's no goal here to make it sort of statistically parsimonious. And there was no goal to have something that will work with standard software, although we've got software out there for people who want to use it. So there's 12 randomized trials, a locally advanced colon cancer, so that means it hasn't spread, hasn't metastasized yet, but it's not tiny. And I'm going to just be analyzing these 12 trials totally separately. And they're all sort of one arm versus another arm, and they may be surgery versus surgery plus drug, or surgery plus drug A versus surgery plus drug B. And so there's sort of all mix of treatments going on here. About 14,000 patients, lots of recurrences, over 4,000 recurrences, nearly 5,000 deaths in total. And most of this censoring. And most of what I'm going to be talking about is in this 2014 paper by Conlon. Okay, so here's the data, lots of numbers, don't worry too much, but just to give you sort of a flavor of the size of a trial. So there's 12 rows here corresponding to the 12 trials, and smallest 250 up to about 2,500. And and you do see 4,000 recurrences, and you do see people who recur but haven't died in the data. You do see people who've died who didn't recur, so they died of something which wasn't from cancer. There's 10 years follow-up roughly in most of the trials. mix of stage 2 and stage 3. They're not all 50-50 randomization. Some of them are sort of 2-to-1 randomization and mix of ages. So there's sort of a range of trials and you can sort of a range of endpoints too. Okay, so just lots of plots now. So you saw the left-hand one already. So this is the time to recurrence, just the Kaplan-Meier plot by stage. So the blue line does stage 2, the black line stage 3, and stage 2 does better than stage 3. And I've shown you two of the trials, trial 3 and trial 5. It's the same across all 12. You get more or less the same picture across all 12 trials. It's very consistent effect of stage on recurrence. So this is on the effect of age, and I've just dichotomized age here. And so the blue is younger than 65, and the black is older than 65. So you don't see much effect of age on time to recurrence, and maybe a subtle difference that the younger people actually tend to recur a tad earlier than older people. So if you look on the treatment effect, okay, so the treatments are different. So trial 3, there's a clear treatment difference, but trial 5, there's no treatment effect. Okay, so now switching to time to death. So now these Kaplan-Meier plots don't have this plateau region. You can't cure people of dying. And so you'll see again the stage has a big effect across the three trials, across the trials. Age has a sort of rather interesting phenomena. So there's older people, which is the black, do a little worse in terms of survival, right? So you expect that, older people die sooner. But it doesn't. That's not in the first 4 years of the study, because what they're dying from in the first 4 years is the cancer, so that sort of age effect only kicks in later on, right? So this is a feature which is, you know, you're not going to capture with sort of standard Cox modeling or standard analysis. And the treatment effects, study 3 has a mild, modest treatment effect. Study 5 doesn't really, on death, time to death. The other part of the model I'm going to talk about is a little bit is after you recur, death is from afterwards, and it's nearly all, well, I don't know that case, nearly all from cancer. And so it's bad. If you recur, it's bad. 2 years, survival about 20%. Okay, so recurrence is quite predictive of death, if you like. Okay, so that was the data. So here's the model. So this is picture of a model. So you can imagine you get, well, it's a conceptual picture. And we'll get, this is just sort of a probabilistic structure. This isn't the data yet. So you get treatment, and you either, imagine you're either cured or you're not cured. You got local disease, you have surgery, they remove the tumor, you get some other treatment. You can think of all the tumors gone or some of it still around. Right? I mean, if it's all gone, we're going to label that as cured. You don't get to observe that at that point in time, but you're cured. I mean, if you're cured, the only thing you can do is die. You can't recur because your cancer's gone, unless you get a second primary, which does happen. But and if you're not cured, then you would recur if you could be followed long enough, or maybe you die first of something else. So these are sort of competing risks. I mean, if you recur, you go to death. So this is the model in pictorial form. So each of these arrows here, on the right-hand side, those are sort of time to event, so those are hazard models. And then this is a binary model here, whether you go into state 1 or state 2. And so what we're going to describe in a minute is there's a sort of a logistic model for whether you go into state 1 or state 2, and there's a Weibull hazard model for each of those four arrows. So when I said it's not, I'm not trying to be parsimonious here, you can see I got sort of five sub-models in this total picture. And so you get different types. So there's data. So there's each of these, there's a state, right? There's four states you could be in. You don't know what state you're in necessarily, but the states are, you're alive and cured, would be state 1. But you don't get to observe people exactly like that. So if you think of like the third case here, you did not recur and you die and dead. So that's the data we might have on somebody. So we can't distinguish whether we did not recur but they died. We can't distinguish whether they went from state 1 to state 4 or from state 2 to state 4. Right? So we don't tell that exactly from the data. Okay, but that's what we get to observe, is sort of partial information on these states. And, okay, so this is just saying there's five models, so logistic and four hazard type models. So the motivation, I guess I've sort of hinted at here, is the treatment can eliminate the cancer, so that's why you're cured or not cured. And if cure happens at the time of treatment, but it's not observable then. And if it's not eliminated, the cancer will come back if you could follow them. But what does the cancer coming back mean? It means it's grown enough to a big enough size to be detectable in some way, for imaging or symptoms or something like that. So it's not something you can observe immediately. And the sort of a kinetics of tumor regrowth is that it happens reasonably fast. It doesn't take a long time. So you'll so all the recurrences happen within about 5 years. There's very little after 7 years. Okay, so that's sort of a motivation. And then, so you don't, so in these different parts of a model, you expect different factors to matter. So what's the probability of cure? That's the logistic model. What's going to matter for that? That's sort of things related to the tumor, how big it is, like how effective the treatment is. You think about the hazard for recurrence, given you're not cured. So that's sort of how quickly the tumor's going to regrow. So that's something to do with the kinetics of tumor growth. You think about hazard of death if you're cured. So that's not about the tumor anymore, because you're not dying from a tumor, so that might be about comorbidities or about age or something like that, how much you smoke. So you expect different factors to play different roles in the different components of a model. So that's what we're trying to discover here. Okay, so there will be a few equations here. So there's a logistic model just for the binary outcome, cured or not cured. There's a Weibull model for each of those arrows, so there's a hazard model, so there's a baseline hazard, and then there's covariates can impact that hazard, so the covariates of the treatment, the stage, and the age of a patient. So there's 25 parameters around here. And so the data is, you know, whether you recur, you know, the time you recurred, the recurrence time and the censoring indicator for recurrence, the death time, the censoring indicator for death, and the covariates. You introduce a latent variable for this unobserved, cured, not cured. One thing here, the censoring times are actually different for recurrence and death quite sometimes. Okay, so there's models, there's notation. I have different types of observations. I don't get to observe you in state one. I get to observe somebody is like recurred and alive, and so the formulas for how to sort of work with that is to calculate a likelihood contribution for each observation. So I'm just going to show you one, and this is the most detail it'll get. So if you recurred and died, if you recurred, you know you're not cured, so that's a 1 minus p. And then the time of recurrence is given by the hazard of recurrence times the probability you haven't recurred yet up to that time and you haven't died yet up to that time. So that's competing risk type things. And then the second line here is that to do with the fact that you died after you recurred. Okay, so there's one of those for every single person, and so each of these p's and lambdas involves parameters, and you have to estimate those parameters, and so we use a Bayesian Markov chain Monte Carlo approach. And one little sort of detail I want to point out is you need prior distributions with Bayesian work, and so for example we have slightly informative priors, and driven by the context. So the state, so beta 1-4 stage, is we force that to be close to zero. So that's saying if you're cured, the stage of cancer you had before you were cured isn't going to matter very much, so the coefficient on that should be fairly close to zero. So we sort of force that in there a little bit. So you do that and you get parameter estimates, and here are many of the 25. And I just want to sort of show you what we expected to happen did happen. So the probability of cure, the logistic model, there's an estimate and a uncertainty standard deviation. So you see a very strong effective stage. Anything red is a strong effect here. So stage impacts the probability of cure and time to recurrence of a cancer. But age impacts the hazard of death, whether you're cured or not cured. So sort of it falls out as you'd expect. And this little one on the right is actually part of a recurrence to death. It was how quickly did you recur? Is that associated with how quickly you die later? And if you recur more quickly, you die more quickly. So there's an association there too, generally. So there's just one trial. You know, we did that across all the trials separately, and you get a remarkable amount of consistency in the results. So I don't. So this is this column-headed cure stage for the cure model. You know, here are the coefficients, and they're all sort of negative and roughly the same size. And you look at the time to recurrence, the age coefficient there, they tend to be slightly negative, so younger people recur a little quicker. So there's a lot of consistency across the trials, not in the treatment effects, but in the things like stage and age. And time to cure to death, how quickly you die as a function of age, all positive coefficients, all quite big, all quite consistent in size. So there's a, you know, sort of quite useful, quite sort of supportive of a model to see this consistency across the studies in the parameters you expect to be consistent. And okay, so I like this picture. I guess I'll just put it in again. Okay, so you saw what you expected to see. The treatment effects did depend on trial. The stage effects, so that's how big the cancer is, that played a role in the probability of cure and how quickly the recurrence happened, and also how quickly the death happened after recurrence. Age had the strongest effect on time to death. This is sort of the structure and what you learn by separating it out into these components. So it's a complex model, but you can learn or not by separating it out in this way. And you can then sort of, you know, so I've written down a model sort of a process which gave rise to the data, if you like. But I can still get out quantities I want from that model. I can think about survival distributions. It wasn't parameterized to give me directly a survival distribution, but I can calculate a survival distribution from the structure of a model. So this is the chance of surviving 5 years, given covariates and parameters. So I can calculate that from the model. I can do it separately for treatment and controls. Okay, but that's, you know, time to death is something I can estimate from a Kaplan-Meier plot. So I can compare how did the model do compared to how did the data do. And it should do well because I've fit to the data, but sort of some sort of check. So there was more formulas here. But you can, so here's how you calculate the chance of survival. You just have to sort of go through, you know, how can you survive at 5 years? Well, you could be cured and don't die, or you could be not cured, don't recur or die, or you could be not cured, recur, but then don't die. So these are, you know, you can just calculate this from all the model structure. There's numerical integration going on here. And then there's 24 points on this dot, two for each trial, the control arm and the treatment arm. And the horizontal axis is 5-year Kaplan-Meier estimate of overall survival. The vertical axis is a model-based estimate of overall survival. So this sort of demonstrates that the model's fitting in this regard. And I guess another sort of somewhat striking thing is, you know, the older trials had about, you know, 50-60% 5-year overall survival. More recent trials have more like 80% overall survival. So it's actually improved quite a bit in colon cancer over the years. I can calculate, so I can, you know, I've got a model now which I think fits the data, and then maybe I can use it to make, you know, to sort of improve my analysis of the data. So rather than just comparing the two treatment arms with a log rank test or, you know, what's the treatment effect at 5 years, I can use a model to do that estimation. So here's the sort of comparison of potential gains in efficiency. So the trial 3, 5-year treatment effect overall survival at 5 years was 7.4% with a standard error of 0.31. If you apply the model, you get basically the same estimate, 0.072, and then a standard error, which is like 20% less, which is, you know, that's sort of a noticeable improvement in terms of the best you could hope to achieve. So there's potential for sort of doing more efficient analysis, maybe running more smaller trials or something like that with this sort of modeling approach. So this is just a summary across the 12 trials of sort of point estimates of treatment effect under the two approaches, one just Kaplan-Meier and one model-based. So if you look at the top pair of lines, that's trial 12, the bottom one is from Kaplan-Meier and the top one is from the model And the point estimate is the middle thing, so that didn't change more or less from one trial to the next, and the error bar, if you like, on the top of a pair is always generally a tad smaller than the bottom of the pair. So potential for gain in efficiency here. And you can have a way to sort of check the fit is to you know, do predictions of something and see how it compares to real data. So I'm just predicting the time to recurrence distribution. There's a data here which you've seen before, and underlying it there's some lines which you can probably just about see showing it fits quite well. Another way to check fit, which actually doesn't get used as much as I think it should be in survival analysis, is Cox-Snell residuals, if anyone knows what those are. So anyway, you can take some function of the data, the estimated survival function of the data, and it should have a uniform distribution. And then you do a plot, and what you hope to see is lots of lines on lots of the data on a diagonal, and it does fit well. So that's trial 3 and trial 5. Another question you might ask is, you know, was all this cure model worth the trouble? You know, I created a lot of parameters here. I would claim that I got a better interpretation of the result, but maybe I can get a decent fit without including a cured fraction. So you could do this multi-state model without a cured fraction, and that would give you 16 parameters, including the regression coefficients. So that would be clearly more parsimonious. And so one way to assess whether you're fitting well in a Bayesian estimation framework is to use DIC, deviance information criteria. And it's always better for the model of a cured fraction, I guess. The fact that these everything's in bolder numbers are smaller than the non-bolder numbers for every single one of these 12 trials. So it's, you know, it sort of fits better. Gives you a nicer interpretation, fits better. Okay, and just finishing up here. So, you know, there's lots of sort of exercise in modeling. I think it's got potential to sort of learn more from the data than you might otherwise. As you know, we chose to do a Bayesian estimation. You could do non-Bayesian approaches here. We chose to use a Weibull hazard. You could use other shapes for the baseline hazard. This is, and I sort of as a sort of a technical point, to some degree, there's a lot of research in the statistical literature on competing risks and semi-competing risks, and I think these multi-state models are a quite natural way to handle that. And actually, I handled competing risks here without telling you about it. Another thing that I'm not showing, which we've done, is this point here. You can actually utilize these models to gain efficiency in the trials, and we showed in separate work that you could have made these trials had an accrual period of about 5 years each, and then maybe 8 years extra follow-up. We could have got the same efficiency of just 2 years instead of 8 years extra follow-up, so saving a lot of money there. And I think, but the main point here is you can get the separate components have nice interpretations, and you can sort of extend it in all sorts of interesting ways to sort of understand more what's going on in the disease than just through simple statistical approaches. And so this is work, PhD student largely, Anna Conlon, data provided by Dan Sargent, and money provided by NIH. Thank you.